Where's the single most effective place to spend our money? Is it in teachers, or is it in classroom materials, or is it in developing a curriculum?
I'd say two things in response to that right now. I think that any investment you can make to improve the quality of teaching, improving the quality and skills of people coming into the profession, helping develop people who come into the profession to be more effective, providing high-quality supervision, evaluation, professional development, mentoring, those kinds of things. Investments there are very well spent, paying teachers adequate salaries to do the work that we're asking them to do. Anything that goes toward improving the quality of teaching is crucial. Secondly, probably the highest yield in terms of return on investment in education spending these days would be in early childhood education. This is when brains are forming, habits of mind are forming, and the research is powerful that the return on investment from working with children from birth to age 5 in terms of developing language and literacy, in terms of developing just brain development period, stimulating the growth of neurons in the brain, is huge. And conversely, not doing that leads to enormous disadvantages that show up as early as kindergarten. So if you want to close achievement gaps, investing in early childhood education is a critical investment.
What kinds of anti-poverty programs should be supported if you're, you know, going to look outside of the classroom to fix these other underlying problems?
Well, I think there are a couple of things, you know, that additional funds in the area of education for students who come from disadvantaged backgrounds can be spent on all kinds of enrichments. That wealthier students take for granted, whether it's tutoring or sports or cultural activities or travel or museums or one thing or another. So there are all kinds of out-of-school educational experiences that give advantage to students who have them. We see, for example, huge summer learning loss among poor kids by comparison with more affluent peers who go to camps and go on exotic travel and things of that nature. Poor kids don't get a chance to do that. So investing in out-of-school enrichment is one thing. Investing in the provision of social mental health services, physical health services within schools where kids don't get that naturally in their own lives and come to school with all kinds of mental trauma, come to school with asthma issues, with vision issues, with hearing issues, all of which impede their capacity to supply their best motivated effort. So spending money to mitigate some of those kinds of issues, spending money on the early childhood education that I mentioned earlier, so making sure that when children come to kindergarten, they're really ready to learn and they've got a solid foundation on which to build knowledge and skill going forward. So all those would be critical investments.
Massachusetts is a labor-heavy state, like Illinois. How does Massachusetts then handle a balance between budget constraints and paying teachers more, or investing in instruction quality?
We've done a better job at paying our teachers. As far as I'm concerned, we don't pay them enough, given what we ask them to do and the importance of their role in society. On the other hand, we have all kinds of unfunded pension liabilities, and I know you're attempting to tackle some of those in this state, as we've attempted to do in our state, and so that's tricky and sensitive to do. So I think that we get the talent that we pay for in education, and I think when we look at some of the nations that do a better job of educating their students than we do, we see that generally speaking, the status of teachers within society is higher, and relatively speaking, they tend to get higher salaries by comparison with other professions. So I think we can do better, but at the same time, with limited funds on the table, you got to make some tough decisions. So policymakers have to make some tough decisions about where to invest those additional funds now.
What are the best kinds of analytics that you get? You know, there's high-stakes testing, but right. Then what other kinds of analytics can we use?
Well, I mean, I think the ultimate metric is, if we had the money and the resources to do this kind of evaluation, is to follow students as they go on to careers and as they go on to college and see how successful they are in those respective environments. So, for example, in Massachusetts, we look at the number of students who need remediation when they go on to public higher education. We look at the number of students who persist from entering college to graduating from college as some indication of whether or not their elementary and secondary education has prepared them to be successful. We talk to employers frequently, not in a systematic way about individual students, but in a general way about, are you getting the talent you need to staff and run the businesses that you run effectively in the future? And a lot of our employers are telling us, no, we're not getting the talent we need. And this is why we see this education issue as fundamentally a jobs issue in the long run, is that if we want to grow businesses in the Commonwealth, and we do, and that's critical to our economic prosperity, then we're going to have a better human capital pipeline. And schools are at the center of that pipeline. So we need to do a better job of preparing people to do the jobs of the future.
Massachusetts has a pretty robust system of charter schools. Here in Illinois, especially in Chicago, they've become more visible and more controversial over the last couple of years. Is there something Massachusetts does that helps the traditional public schools that are, quote unquote, left behind by charters?
I'm not sure I agree with the proposition that schools are left behind. In Massachusetts, for example, when a student leaves to go to a charter school, and the mainstream district is no longer serving that student, they're reimbursed 100% the first year and then 25% each year for five succeeding years. So they get 225% of the per pupil expenditure for the pupil who left, even when they don't have the expense of serving that student. So I don't think that those schools are left behind or disadvantaged, but I know that there's financial pressure. In other words, there's competition over scarce resources. And we have now created a new brand of public school called charter schools. Some of them are terrific and do a great job. Some are mediocre and don't deserve to be in business. And I think what's important for a state is to develop a mechanism for approving charter schools and for monitoring their performance that makes sure that we're only supporting the very best charter schools, because they're expensive, because we have to do that kind of reimbursement. They do provide constructive models, the best ones, for how we can do a better job of educating our students. And they do provide constructive pressure and competition to the mainstream system to embrace reforms that they might not otherwise embrace. But they're not a silver bullet.